Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance need the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the call.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Another weekend has passed. Another few days closer to the end of 2017. And, of course, we see not a lot going on. We see the markets, you didn't like some of the tax information over the weekend. And, you know, does it really matter? And I would say the answer is probably no. I don't know what, you know, again, I think we've got, you know, so many dramatic issues that are so far gone that it's just a joke when we look at it. And of course, you know, Bitcoin had a extremely volatile week last week and going crazy. And, you know, gold was under some pressure. And, you know, we had OPEC doing their deal of some trying to manipulate and steal some more money, you know, try to keep those prices up. And my, I don't understand why. I always find that to be somewhat fascinating that OPEC, you know, that we allow OPEC to do these things. And, you know, when we should be pumping away and sticking it to them, you know, for years, OPEC stuck it to us. I mean, we can go back into, you know, the first one I can really remember was in the 70s, and I was actually pumping gas in those days. And, you know, I remember seeing, you know, the alternate license plate number or the different, you know, that you could only fill up, and the lines were, you know, long. And that was, I think, the first time gas went to either 50 or 60 or 70 cents, whatever it was. And, you know, why is oil all of a sudden, you know, so expensive? I mean, and of course, we wouldn't call $55 or $60 a barrel expensive. But, you know, I think that it should eventually go back down to, you know, 10. But why would we, why are we so enamored and why are we letting OPEC take charge here when the United States has a 200-year supply of oil? Why are we letting them get away with this? And that, I think, is a bigger question, you know, because we don't have to. And wouldn't it be easier to, you know, we know that the big oil companies make money. We know that the shale producers can make money. So wouldn't it make more sense to say no and not let them get away with this stupid manipulation and cut and start to focus in on, you know, putting our oil out and putting it out in droves and quantities? I mean, I know we all know that big oil has a big control on you know, the government. I mean, wouldn't you think at some point in time we would have more alternative energy spaces? Wouldn't you think the smartest people in the world wouldn't have already figured out how to, you know, either get that electric car or that battery to run better, or to at least, if you want to continue to use fossil fuels, give you more fuel efficiency? Isn't it amazing that, I'm going to try to remember the year, but let's say it was 1968 when Toyota made its first appearance into the United States. And of course, if you remember, in those days, American cars' speedometers only went to 99,000 miles. 99,999 was the top. And of course, when Toyota came in, and I think they were the first, their speedometers went to 999,000. So they had an extra digit telling you that their cars were probably built better. Now, they were, and it was. And of course, I think, you know, the U.S. car companies have caught up in quality. But again, we were, you know, in those days, you know, we were more of a, you know, a built-in obsolescence society. You know, build it to break. You know, everything we bought was built to break. And again, that was okay because we had the money and we were making money. And of course, you know, we wanted new anyways. So it was, you know, it was, I guess we'll call it planned obsolescence. And then, of course, you know, we had more competition came in and things started to last longer. And of course, other than cars, we have reverted back into even worse obsolescence because now everything's plastic. Everything's, you know, crap. It breaks right away. But my simple point here is, wouldn't you think we in all this time we couldn't have figured out a better way to get more, a little bit more fuel efficiency? I mean, shouldn't the average car get 25 or 30 miles to the gallon? I mean, you know, again, it's not huge, but a little bit of savings here and there, I think, is something that, you know, that everybody could use. And I think that would be more important and helpful in stimulating the economy. You know, it's not bad enough that all of the gas stations now and all the oil companies are not only in oil and gas, but they're in grocery business, you know, basically wherever you go. I mean, if you look at the big stations, you know, the BP Amoco, everyone you go to has a food center, a Thornton's, Speedway. They're all everything now. So you don't have, you know, basically you can get a lot of your shopping done right there if you want. You know, and wouldn't you think that we would, you know, it would be they could accept and we could work with something that was a little bit more fuel efficient. But of course, again, this goes back to, you know, money and big oil controlling and having a bigger control of the government. And I think these are things to me that are more of a tragedy than anything else is that we refuse to let, you know, the true free markets, you know, and you yet we had to bail out, you know, General Motors, you know, and Chrysler had their issues many, many years ago with Lee Iacocca. And, you know, the only one that's been able to basically stay whole the entire time was Ford. But wouldn't you think that we could create an environment where there was more fuel efficiency, better operations, longer lasting? But of course, that would take away the obsolescence plan and the, you know, build it to break so we can replace it. But I think one of the big things that doesn't make sense and that I struggle with is why? Why are they kept out of those things, and why haven't they been, you know, more brought down into real earth, the oil companies? I think that's something that I find very troubling, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they give big money and they're big lobbyists, and of course they get a lot of things that they want, and always at the detriment to middle class Americans. And I think that is, indeed is a tragedy from that standpoint, because we should be able to have better running cars, less work to be done, and more fuel efficiency. So, A, we wouldn't have the problem with OPEC, and they wouldn't have any control. I mean, they shouldn't even be respected or a bunch of crooks anyways. So, you know, if we want to look at it from that standpoint, I mean, you know, do we really think that they need, you know, do you think you're paying those guys that drill it all out there any money? They're paying them nothing. You know, so I think that the whole situation is bad. And so now, because of OPEC, now, again, they haven't done a great job because oil is only up a couple of percent since they started this whole thing a year ago. But why should it be that way? Why should oil should be so much cheaper now if we would, you know, again, let the markets take over and do it? But of course, that's not always the case. And when you have the big lobbies out there that actually benefit from these things happening, makes for another little bit of a problem. And, you know, that's kind of the way I see it. You know, obviously, matter of opinion. We're going to step out here for a break and be back with Jane King. But in the meantime, while you're at your for your listening pleasure, don't forget to go to libertytalk.fm and you can download The Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you for free. I email it to you every day after the market close. And, of course, you can get that by going to BubbaTrading.com. And there's a little box that will pop up, and you can just fill it out. No pay, no fee, no nothing. And I just email it to you every day with my thoughts of the market, what happened that day, and what's going to happen the next day. In the meantime, we're going to stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show. Yeah. Welcome back. back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the one, the only, the very talented Jane King from Lila Max Media, and also the author of the Ka-Ching Report, who you can find in the, at Bubba Trading. Jane King, what's up?
Not much, Todd. Just see, making it through another week and watching Washington just devolve into dysfunction.
Well, I guess the biggest question is, when does Washington dissolve itself, and when do we get a new Washington and get rid of all these nuts out there? Because in my opinion, they don't do a very good job.
No. That's up to us. I mean, we have to vote new people in. I mean, it's just, I don't know, like, why they can't get things done. I just think they're so dysfunctional, and so many of them have been there so long. You know, you look at like a Bob Corker. I mean, he created a business, very successful. I mean, you'd think he would get it. You have to get things done. But he's still not doing it. And I know he's got a problem with the president. They need to just step that aside. They need to grow up. They need to act like adults and do their jobs. I mean, it's stunning that they can't seem to get something passed.
Well, I don't know. I think that goes along with, you know, you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is, you know, one of President Trump's first plans or objectives was to start to work on limiting term limits. And that hasn't even come up yet. And that kind of is irritating. But these guys will never get anywhere as long as they continue to let guys make careers out of being a politician, because they don't have, in my opinion, they don't have our best interest at heart. They have their own interest at heart, and they go in, you know, some go in wealthy and come out wealthier, and some go in moderate and come out real wealthy. And I just don't understand how that always works.
Yeah, really. How do you get wealthy? I mean, it was never meant to be that way. I mean, they were meant to, like, do their thing in the private sector, give back to their communities and to their country by serving a couple of terms and then going back to the private sector. I mean, they were never meant to come in here and stay for, like, some of these people thought have been there 50 years. I mean, can you even imagine? I mean, they know nothing else. And, I mean, you can go talk to your constituents all you want, but until you've lived somebody else's life as a business owner, or, you know, in a private sector, or as a doctor, or you're writing healthcare legislation, I mean, you can't possibly expect to really do a good job until you have all those different perspectives. And it's just, I mean, I'm just so disappointed that my whole adult life so far since graduating from college, like, our government in this country has just been such a disappointment.
And I think it will continue to do so. And I think this is, you're seeing, I think, the true swamp at work. Because the anti-swamp guy would be Donald Trump. And, of course, he's having a lot of trouble getting things done, except for what he can just sign himself and pass through as an executive order. But he has not had any cooperation from almost anybody on the Hill. And I think that's a travesty. And I think that's an injustice to everybody. What do you think?
Well, but what he does have is half of the American public behind him. And in many cases, people very passionately behind him. And I think that's what keeps him going. I mean, just look, so he hasn't even been in office for a year yet. So that'll be in January already. Bob Corker says he's leaving. Jeff Flake says he's leaving. He's changed things around with other elections. It takes a while. I mean, this swamp is really deep. It's like it's deeply entrenched into the earth, and it's going to take a while to change those things, especially when you have so much resistance. I mean, and is there anything more swampy than this fund that they use to pay off harassment victims, and nobody has to talk about who made the money, and it's all taxpayer funded? I mean, it's just unbelievable, some of the stuff that's been going on.
And speaking of that, what do you think about Matt Lauer?
Well, I was shocked when it happened. I'm in the industry, so I've always heard he was kind of a little bit of a jerk. Never heard anything about the sexual stuff. I was like, wow. I mean, it felt like the earth shifted in terms of the media world. For him, you know, the highest paid person at NBC, which is really the most profitable news show on television, for them to get rid of him in 48 hours was pretty shocking. And, I mean, well, you know, today's show is a huge franchise. He's been on it for, what, 20 years or, you know, at least, or almost that long. And I think it's going to be hard to replace him. It's tough to find somebody in mornings that the American public likes. But things are shifting. Things are changing in this country. This is like a watershed moment. And I don't think we're ever going to really go back to where we were.
I hope not, because, again, you know, you and I have all heard of the casting couch and all these other things. And, it's about time that women got, equal rights and didn't have to hide in the closet and didn't have to sleep their way to the top, as they say. I mean, I think that was, and I think this is just the top of the first inning. I think there's going to be a lot more shocking discoveries over the next, couple of years of people that are going to, we found out were doing things they weren't supposed to do. Any opinion on that?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of really nervous, very powerful men that are feeling it right now. It's a shame what's going on. I mean, I've worked in the TV industry for a while. I've known people that, went from running teleprompters to anchoring on headline news, overnight. And, everybody's suspicious about stuff like that. And it's, what do you do? And I actually have a friend in the movie industry, a male, by the way, and I was kind of complaining to him about some of the stuff that I would see. And he said, he sees it too, obviously, in the movie industry. I think even worse than television. And he said, I learned a long time ago, just do my job, do it well. And he said, inconsistently and over time, you'll be rewarded for that. So I've always, remembered that advice that he gave me a long time ago.
Now, we talk once in a while about your farming background. You're from Indiana, and your family's farmers. How are they being affected by these ridiculously low grain prices? And then, of course, I think a lot of that ties back into even the Fed regulations and things that are going on, which has really hampered farmers, in my opinion. Do you have any thought to that?
Well, I know farmland prices are going down, so all of us are directly affected by that. And I think they just, it's been 3 years now that we've really seen these low prices. So you start getting in year three, year four, it starts to get really painful. I mean, there's only so much you can take of like, well, we can't do this, and we can't do this, and we can't do this. And so, but it is kind of the way farming is, so subjected to weather. And I think a lot of them just think maybe the cycle will start turning around. NAFTA negotiations are going to be affecting farms and trade a lot. So I think they would like to see something worked out there. I mean, renegotiated, but still allowing for those markets to be available to U.S. farmers. So, they're watching it, but I'll see everybody at Christmas, so I'm sure I'll get an earful about that.
I'm sure you'll get an earful of corn. Anyway, so, we haven't talked about the tax plan, so let's talk about it. I mean, first of all, I didn't like it to begin with. I didn't think it was a very good plan, and I thought Trump was settling because he just wants to get a victory. And now, of course, the idiot Republicans, they're battling over nonsense once again. And I mean, I don't understand it all. What are your thoughts?
I know. Well, my biggest complaint, I'll just repeat what I've said to you so many times, is why do they start with just cuts, just tax cuts? They need to start with cutting spending as well. I just don't understand. Like, that is so obvious and so common sense. And there has to be millions, if not billions, spent in the federal government that just really doesn't serve a purpose anymore. Old programs that are outdated. Maybe there's technology that can be used to streamline operations that'll save. I mean, for them not to even bring that up, and even these Republicans who are complaining about tax cuts, for them not to bring it up is just shocking to me. I mean, there's two sides of the balance sheet. I mean, you have to cut spending and, you have to raise your income, and they're not even addressing one side of the balance sheet. So it's insane that that's not happening. The corporate tax cuts, I think, are definitely needed. I think we need to bring some of those companies back. I think companies need to free up some cash to hire people, to invest, to just stimulate things and get things going again. It looks like the SALT, state and local taxes thing, is going to stay. So that's unfortunate for me. I live in New York, but I wish New Yorkers were a little smarter about who they voted for. I mean, New Yorkers tend to vote for, liberals, of course, but they tend to vote on social issues. So, and not economic ones so much. And, they're very environmental and, lesbian, gay rights, things like that. And, which is fine, but I think they need to start being a little smarter about the economic side of the voting too. So maybe this will force that to happen, although who knows how long that'll take. So, it's not a great tax plan, but the market loves it and the 401k loves it.
That's always good. And Jane King, you're the best. Always great to have you on. Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Kachin Report. As always, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Our friend Jane King from Lila Max Media and the Kachin Report. And of course, we want to remind you to check out our highschoolinvesting.com program. It's something we do to help educate high school kids and get them ready for some financial literacy. And you can help us out at patreon.com/BubbaTrading. We're going to step out of here for a break, and we'll be back with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com at the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, we're coming right back to you. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the one, the only Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com, our technical expert. And make sure you check out DemeterResearch.com because he's got a lot of great information. Matt, what's up, my man?
Hey, Todd. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, you know, Matt, we looked at last week and it looks like there may be a little bit of volatility coming back in the market. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's weird. We're getting volatility on higher prices. So, you know, that's usually a warning sign. I think what's actually happening, if I'm correct in what I'm looking at, is that the put to call ratio is kind of skewed. People are paying premium for calls. So I think if you're looking at, you know, really speculative activity, you know, it's the call side that people are really buying. And that's, I think, what's sending volatility higher. You know, I could be wrong about that because I'm not an option expert. But that suggests to me, I mean, that doesn't sound, you know, from a contrarian point of view, doesn't sound that bullish.
No, I mean, it just looks like there's things going on. And, you know, it looked like Thursday was almost, I would almost look at this as a possible blow off top on a daily chart. I mean, that was really a pretty fancy rally. And but what did you think? I know you've been bullish the NASDAQ, and the NASDAQ has performed well, and it still actually looks the best, I think, of the bunch, but it did have a little bit of an ugly day on Wednesday. What did you think about all that action? Are you still looking for the 8,000 levels, you know, it's anytime soon in NASDAQ, or has any of the things changed, anything broken down since the last time we chatted?
No, nothing's broken down. You know, the NASDAQ, just by the virtue of having a higher target than I have with the rest of them, you know, we're looking at 8,000. That might take a year, right? And if it does, then over that time, it should outperform, you know, Dow and S&P. But in the short term, it can certainly underperform, which it's done over the past couple of days. But no, I'm still happy with what the NASDAQ's doing. It pulled back down to that 6,800 level that the NASDAQ composite did. That 6,800 level that we talked about last week, that was perfect. So we bought some. It's bounced from that level. That was a breakout level. So it was normal that it would, you know, come back to it. So I still think, you know, the NASDAQ looks fine. I wouldn't get, you know, we're not, you know, heavily loading the boat yet. There are a few minor resistance levels still, you know, just above, which if we puncture, then I think it would be, you know, we could buy more. But when you look across the board, everything's pretty overbought right now. On daily indicators, S&P's overbought, Dow's overbought. I'll be interested to see what kind of pullback we get. If we get a pullback in a Dow, for example, the breakout level there was 23,600-ish, let's say 23,600 approximately. So if we get a pullback there, I would think that's where we're going to get support, 23,600. On that pullback, I want to see how the indicators react. If they get more oversold, then you know we're setting up for bigger rallies.
Well, you know, again, I mean, I think that I actually think the NASDAQ looks the best out of the bunch. So I'm not bullish, period, basically. But I do think if I look at it and when I discuss it, it does look better than the others, even with the big rallies we've had. I mean, the pattern suggests it has more room to go on the upside if we're going to continue up. And of course, seasonality tells us that this time of year, we do tend to rally a little bit more anyways. But now you look at the general markets, and of course, we are seeing, as you mentioned, you know, volatility is higher in a market that has been rising. These moves are getting bigger. And what I'm starting to see myself, and I don't know if you measure this, but some price volatility, which, you know, it doesn't always show up as implied, but it does show more movement. So it does show there's either a little bit more concern in the market or there's a little bit more activity. Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, you know, I like it. I'm glad that we're getting a little bit of, you know, up down action. But yeah, no, I think we're going to look for a pullback, you know, sometime soon. One that I'm looking at is Russell 2000. I think Russell 2000 has a target at 15,000, and let me get that one. 15,071, and you know, there's prior support at 15,012. I'd actually be a buyer at 15,012. I've been hating on the Russell 2000 for a while, but it's broken out. So I would give it the benefit of the doubt if we get a pullback.
Okay, yeah, it all makes sense. And then, of course, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about the cryptos and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is in the headlines now every single day, which to me kind of indicates, well, maybe it's peaking a little bit for now. I mean, again, I think the chart itself suggests it might be a little bit of bubblish in this moment. But again, I'm not against it. I just think that the chart itself suggests it could be a little bit bubblish. Or what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, every time I turn on, you know, CNBC or Bloomberg, I'm seeing Bitcoin every hour, essentially. So that's a, you know, sort of a contrarian indicator. Right where we got to, where we got up to 11,600 in Bitcoin, I think, you know, it's probably going to consolidate for a little bit. It's very overbought on indicators, and I think it's just due for some consolidation here. I don't know it's really going to pull back that much. You have clear support at 8,000 ish. We had that crazy 2 days ago, 3 days ago. We had that big rally up to that level, 11,600, and then we had a big pullback, like 2,000 point range, 3,000 point range, something like that, and you know, it happened in seconds, in minutes. So it's tough to catch sometimes, but basically I think it just chops sideways for a little while here, and then it has a potential to break back to the upside.
And those type of chart, you know, everybody talks about the chart and how it looks, and I go, just why don't you pull up an Amazon chart in the same period and lay them side by side, you'll see almost the exact same chart. So, you know, again, right. You know, people that don't understand it like to talk about it like they know what they're talking about. So the first inclination of economists and everybody else is, well, it's a bubble, it's a scam. And I go, no, it's not. It's a real legitimate currency, is it not?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. You know, and the thing, you know, we've talked about is that Bitcoin, technologically speaking, is probably not going to end up, as of today's situation, is probably not going to be the spending currency of the future. There's other cryptos out there that are probably better positioned to become that. But Bitcoin was the first. It's acting like gold. And the reason why it keeps going up is because a lot of these exchanges, when you come in, you typically the Bitcoin is the base currency. It's not the dollar. It's not any fiat currency. It's Bitcoin. So if you're going to go buy something, any of the other cryptos, you're going to be buying it with Bitcoin. If you're selling it, then you're typically selling it default back into Bitcoin. So Bitcoin will constantly have this, you know, bid under it because people want to get into the other ones. So you know, even if it's not, say, you know, the best, you know, spending type of currency, it is serving a function that the more people come into the crypto space, the more, you know, Bitcoin will be bought.
No, like I said, I you know, Kevin O'Leary, who from the Shark Tank made this big, you know, interview about what, you know, that it's not. And I go, yeah, that's all the rich Keynesians would never want to consider this as a real currency because they like the way the system works now with the free money and all the other stuff. And I go, hey, anything you can exchange for something else in wealth. And of course, Patrick Byrne from Overstock.com, they've been in this and taking Bitcoin as currency for, I think, 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, and they've been keeping a portion of their earnings in Bitcoin, which I think has been great. And I think that shows why their stock is outperforming. I totally agree with the you know, the people that are so negative on Bitcoin. They have a vested interest in seeing the current system, you know, hold up. And that system has all kinds of flaws that I don't think the crypto space has.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I agree because, listen, the government, you know, they're worried about it. You know, I heard on Thursday there was a press conference, and they go, well, the Bitcoin is White House is investigating Bitcoin. I go, okay, I know why, because they want to get taxes on it. You know, in the meantime, all the third world nations and all the offshore sites, they want Bitcoin. In fact, you can't even buy with cash anymore. They will only take Bitcoin. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, look, you know, fiat is just a history of, you know, hyperinflations, confiscations, capital controls. You know, you look across the world, across history, fiat has always just been destroyed. And the fact that people want to, you know, avoid that makes total sense. I mean, you know, yeah, in Venezuela, there's a huge premium on Bitcoin. So, you know, and Zimbabwe is another, you know, example recently. So, you know, and we're going the same route. I mean, you know, since the Fed was since we had the Fed since 1913, the dollar's lost 97% of its purchasing power. I mean, you know, who are these guys?
They're taking our money, Matt. That's who those guys are. They like to offer a secondary on the cash that I'm carrying in my pocket all the time. That's who those guys are. But this is our expert, as you can tell, and he's a crypto expert as well, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Make sure you check out his website as well as go to LibertyTalk.fm, and you can always download the interviews with me and Matt on a regular basis. They're always posted up there for you, as well as the Sporting Edge. And don't forget about our high school investing. You go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading, and you can help us out. And, of course, for those who do, we'll give you a special webinar and also an autographed copy of my book. And this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a little bit and come back with more from Matt Demeter, who's going to give us the secrets to the technical aspects of understanding markets. As you can tell, he takes care of it pretty damn well. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more with Matt. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the technical expert of our show, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Also, the cryptocurrency expert. And Matt, before we get into anything else, I just want to know, you know, I know you think there may be another main cryptocurrency, you know, after the Bitcoin. Is there one that's out there now that you think is going to be there, or is it one that we might have not ever even heard of yet?
It's very possible one that we haven't heard of yet. There's still a lot of people working on different ideas. New ICOs will be coming out. But there, I think one of the key features is going to be privacy. I think as I was saying, I think the privacy coins are going to be big time. I think privacy is a key issue for cryptos. Some of those include Monero, Dash, Zcash. They all have technology built in, so that's very difficult to track who was the, you know, buyer, who was the seller, you know, how the transaction took place, the identities behind those transactions. That, I think, is going to be key, because I think, you know, when the you know, when governments try to, quote, crack down on the space, you know, people aren't going to want to be involved in ones that are easy to track. And it's just because, you know, most people want privacy when it comes to their money. I mean, there's corrupt governments, there's unscrupulous litigation out there. There's all kinds of reasons why people prefer privacy. And I think that'll become, a key issue. So I think, yeah, those privacy coins are probably, you know, worldwide more likely to become a worldwide currency.
Well,
I said
on Varney on Thursday morning, I said, you know, if you're leaving China, okay, and you got, you know, $100,000 in gold, it's going to be hard to get out. But if you have $100,000 other Bitcoin, you have it in your phone, you can just leave. So, I mean, again, I think that now the government's diddling around because they want to figure out how they can get their cut out of it. And I think that's why the big banks talk bad about it. In the meantime, they're investing it in themselves, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, Matt, what do we got in have you been tracking the grain spaces all recently? It's been pretty dead. I wouldn't blame you if you said I wasn't tracking it because there's not even anything to do there anyways. But have you been? And if you have been, what's going on in your mind?
Well, the only one that I'm really that interested in is corn. We just put just got long corn. Just a couple days ago, it double bottomed from about a week prior, and it looks to me like it could be a long term bottom. I'm not saying that it is, but it has the right pattern for that. So we're long corn, whether it be a short-term trade or a long-term trade. We'll put multiple contracts on, and you know, as we get to higher levels, we'll take some off, but we'll leave some to see if this can be a bigger thing. Soybeans, still I'm bearish. I still don't believe that soybeans have bottomed. Wheat potentially could have, you know, as I keep saying, I think wheat is relatively better. But corn is the one that I think most recently, you know, grabbed my attention because I think it might be at a bottom.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could see that for sure. I mean, again, I thought that my one concern is soybeans as well. I think 985 is a real crucial level, and we've been down there and back and forth. And, you know, that's what we see now. Of course, the euro currency has been, I guess mixed would say, but it seems as I guess making a lower high. And I know that we originally had a target of 121, 122. Is that still in the cards for you, or is it looking like it's starting to change a little bit?
It's still possible. And, you know, I think I'd probably be thinking a little bit lower, like 120 in the 120s, maybe 121. But I do think probably has a little bit more upside. Dollar, I still think has a little more downside, but we're getting close enough in the dollar that, you know, I'm thinking about going long again, the dollar, but I'm gonna leave it for a few more days, see how it turns out. I'd still like to see it come down, the dollar index, to about 91.85-ish is I think where the line is at the moment. So that would mean a little bit more downside in the dollar, obviously, and some more upside in the euro.
Now, you know, I saw Friday the Canadian it like exploded to the upside. You have any thoughts on the Canadian?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to get to – it's a declining line, and it's currently at about 82 cents now. I've been talking about 83 cents, but like I said, it's been declining. So if we get to 82 cents Canadian to dollar, then, you know, we get short the Canadian. But for right now – I'd rather be long Canadian than short it.
I got you. No, it makes sense. I mean, again, that's why you're the technical expert, because you have no opinion. You're just looking at what the charts are telling you. And you're looking at, you know, a bunch of different things. And I know crude oil was one of your things. You were looking to get to the 60s or a little bit higher than that. And, you know, Friday we had a big explosion. But to me, it doesn't look all that good. It looks like it's really sellable here. But tell me why I'm wrong, or where you think it should go now.
Well, it's right back up to rising resistance. That's a problem. But if it can get above, I don't see major resistance until we get to 63. I have a strong declining resistance line around 63. And then above, I have a rising one that's in the 64, 65 zone. What I'm really looking for to know which of these two targets is going to be the top. I'm looking at the indicators, and I'm looking at weekly RSI, and I want to see weekly RSI get to, I think it's about 75-ish. Let me see. It's about 78-ish. So if we get to about 78 in weekly RSI, I'll know that's about the top.
All right. And I say that the bonds are cooked, and I say that they're going much lower from here. They may pop a little bit, but I say they're going much lower. What say you?
Yeah, well, eventually they're going a lot. Yeah, I agree. They're going a lot lower. And it's just a question of in the short term, I'm not as clear. It's holding on to some support levels. I have resistance at right now I have resistance at 131.50 on the upside for TLT, and on the downside it's about 123 essentially. So if 123 gets broken, then I say, you know, it's broken any form of support that could hold it together. And if it bounces up to 131 ish, then I'm a short seller. Right now we're neutral. I just want to see how this is going to play out.
I understand. And now, in your technical work, do you ever take into consideration like the seasonality of the time of year? Does that come in play for you at all?
A little bit. I mean, with the Santa Claus rally type stuff usually happens. So you tend to interpret the chart a little bit more bullishly if you can, because most of the time you can have two or more interpretations of any chart, but you always go with the one you think is more likely. Sometimes it tips, the seasonality tips the balance a little.
No, right. I mean, I agree. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like I look at Thursday as a blow off top, but then I go, well, but it is December, and there could be, another rally, sneaking in here. And of course, it could be on the tax vote. I know that you don't chart that, but I mean, that last bit of exuberance could come from the vote. Right. And, that could make the final push before we start to see some selling. I know that, we both expect some consolidation, a little bit downward side momentum, but we haven't really seen a lot of that of recent vintage. And, it may just wait until the first quarter. It's hard to say, obviously, when it's going to happen, but we know that it will happen at some point. Now, what about are you doing anything with the yen in here?
Yen is I really want to get long the yen, and that's because commercials are heavily long yen. But I can't do it while the price action is doing what it's doing. It's been weakening, and I have a target in dollar yen at about 119, and it's declining. It's declining about moderately. But for right now, 119, if we got there, I would get short dollar yen and thus, long yen.
Right. No, that makes sense. And, so as we look, across the globe, do you work all the way through the end of the year, or will you shut down early because it just gets to a point where it becomes so slow, or you just go right all the way through January 1st?
I pretty much go all the way through. Almost, every time, unless I happen, if it's one of those things where, you go visit family or something, obviously it slows down, but no, I tend to trade, the entire time.
Listen, I just want people to know I want to also know that this is Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com, and make sure you check out his website. He is the Bubba Show technical expert, and he does a great job keeping us informed. Matt, as always, I appreciate, thank you for being here.
Todd, always great to be here, and thanks a lot.
All right, and this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you check out DemeterResearch.com as well as LibertyTalk.fm, and you can download all of mine and Matt's interviews, and I know many of you follow Matt, so make sure that you continue to do so because he's on top of his game almost all the time. And, of course, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, and don't forget to check out our daily updates, which you get for free. All you have to do is go to BubbaTrading.com and sign up for them. They come email to you every day. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.